Thank you for downloading the Friday Night Comedy Podcast from Radio 4. To find out more, visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. But not until you've enjoyed this week's news quiz.
We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
As we start with a cutting from BH Life magazine for Bournemouth residents, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Bournemouth's original children's festival ran from 1905 but had to be stopped in 1914 when fighting broke out that led to the start of World War I.
And our thanks to Julia Little of Bournemouth for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Holly Walsh. Set them on my left, Ramesh Ranganathan and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, whose welfare policies aren't faring well?
Oh, Lordy. Labour policy is a bit like Channel 4. Not all the content is appalling, but somebody told the people in charge that stigmatising marginalised people grabs headlines. So Channel 4 make programmes called Aren't Poor Fat People Hilarious? And Labour wheels out Rachel Reeves, who says, look, our message is gobbledygook, but it's important that we make that gobbledygook even more incomprehensible to Britain's hard cost of working, one nation living crisis families who do the right thing by getting the skills they need to compete with graduates who stack shelves in Asda. Because this is the problem with this whole idea of, oh, we'll get, you know, young people off of benefits and make them go into training. Training to do what? Basically, they mean kids who haven't got maths GCSE. If you don't have maths GCSE, it's a curse that follows. It's like worse than having a criminal record. It follows you your whole life. There are countries you can't even go to. So my solution is you give everyone at 16 maths GCSE. I mean, you know, I got an A in O-level level maths in 1977. I couldn't do it now. You know, I'd walk into the exam room and say, what did I come in here for? But, you know, so it's just this idea of training. I mean, we need to force people to pay people properly and provide apprenticeships, not bludgeon. And most people in receipt of benefits have got jobs anyway. So, and why not? The people... You know, why not force the banks? You know, they've had quite a lot of state benefits. Why not make them go back to school? I suspect many of them haven't got maths GCSE.
I just feel really... I've got three fabulous kids. They're all in their 20s. And I feel sorry for young people now. Because, honestly, they've got poor job prospects. They've got massive student debts. They're all expected to wear patterned leggings. I think it's just awful.
The whole thing is about this entitlement and contribution thing. You know, this idea that everyone must have contributed into the system before they can receive something. And you think, well, how do you... I mean, my friend Eva, who's two, was in hospital for the first 6 months of her life. She'd only been in the country a few hours. I doubt whether she had a passport of any description. She had contributed nothing to the Exchequer and yet was in receipt of NHS care, undeservedly, I may say.
I think one of the problems is that, Ed Miliband's not doing well in the polls.
No, he really isn't. In a recent poll, the public were asked, is this man ready to be PM? 31% said no, 22% yes, and 47% said, I don't know, but I loved him as the penguin in the wrong trousers.
The Labour Twitter account was hacked, and I don't know if anyone saw this. And what I loved about this is, if you hack a political party's Twitter account, usually you'll swear or say something horrific, because it's fun. But the person who hacked it said, everyone will get a free owl. Now, that is the most popular policy statement Labour has made. Because Twitter went, yeah, we'll have a free owl. That sounds absolutely lovely.
I think it's a great step up from the zero owl working contracts.
I'm sorry, but extra point to Romesh. That was a fantastic.
This idea that Miliband is unelectable is a media confection, because once you say someone's unelectable because of what they look like, everyone says, yeah, that's right, yeah. And you say, what are you, that shallow? No, but the fact is, in this terribly shallow age where people are judged by appearance, and so this is what everybody thinks. I don't think that. I'm not that shallow. I'm interested in his policies. I don't care that he's got too many teeth and funny adenoids and his haircut looks like it was decided by an electoral college system. You know,
But Peter Mandelson said that he couldn't pretend that when knocking on doors, people were excited about Ed Miliband. Although I have to say, probably, because they're thinking, why the hell is Peter Mandelson knocking on my door? But,
night, presumably. Yeah.
Polly, you're a young, much younger person. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea. I'm surprised that you're anti it. I thought it was quite a good idea. I think sending people who haven't got qualifications, helping them try and find some kind of direction, encouraging them to train up in the job that they want to do, I think that's a good idea. I'm surprised you're laying into them so much.
Because training to do what? I mean, how do you know at that age what you're going to do, what you want to do? It depends what jobs are available, doesn't it? If the only job is working in Tesco's, what is the training for that?
Working in Lidl.
I got personally offered just now employment for 4 young people to carry a box around that I can stand on to make me a normal height. I am personally making that off. I will pay them a reasonable low wage. There is a possibility that in the future I will promote them to bathing me in the
That's not a promotion.
That is a promotion.
Ed Miliband has unveiled a series of new welfare policies aimed at getting more young people in work in the wake of plummeting poll figures. The opposition will pledge to deny benefits to jobless people under 21. The category, jobless people under 21, has been brought in to replace the old term for them, children. Holly, who's been ranked as the NH best?
Oh, I love this story. This is a story to be really proud of. This is the news that the British have the best healthcare system in the world. And when I heard this, I thought, I knew we could do this. I knew it. I mean, when I watched this in the qualifiers, playing against the French hospital system, I thought we looked good. And we picked up a few injuries, but if anything, that helped us. And, this is the news that in a US foundation has proved that according to them, out of 11 countries, we came top with the NHS. And the NHS gets so much of a sort of bad stick, and it's just nice to see that we're doing all right or something.
It's a bit, for me, it's a bit like the World Cup. For some inexplicable reason, Denmark is not involved, so it doesn't count. I don't know how they chose these particular 11 countries that they decided. Let's have a look at them.
I'm not sure.
They tried to find 10 that were worse than England. So that we look good.
Because the Americans notoriously don't like the British healthcare system.
Is it the 11?
Yeah, the 11 wealthiest countries.
Yeah, 11 wealthiest nations.
Americans don't like our system because you're not allowed to bring guns into the operating theatre.
Can I just say, we had lots and lots of people send in the same clipping, so I'm just going to get Corrie to read that out. Thank you to everybody who sent the same one in.
Expert panel rates NHS world's best healthcare system. The only serious black mark against the NHS was its poor record on keeping people alive.
I've got a theory about this, why they're bad at keeping people alive, but everything else is good. It's because British people, we know we have the NHS, which means we start behaving like absolute knobs. For example, a few years ago, I broke my arm jumping off a pier. Now, there is no way I would have done that had I known that I'd have to work 6 months for that 4 days in hospital.
I don't think there are many people jumping off a pier because they think this would be free to get sorted out. I mean that's an unusual tactic.
It is. I've been to the House of Lords loads of times. It never occurred to me to do that. I have to say, I once got so drunk I ended up in casualty, and I will kill my agent for that. Nurses not wearing squeaky shoes. This is one of the new things that they. I don't think you. Do you want to hear squeaky shoes when nurses walk around? I want to hear that tuba music that used to follow Hattie Jakes in Carry On.
I think you want the squeaky shoes because you want to know that they're coming. Because the only time I was in a hospital to have my tonsils removed when I was 21, and the right one grew back, as if you've heard me.
Was that when
it grew back? Because I'm essentially the in-between step between humanity and superpowers, but that's a different story. So my right tonsil grew, but anyway, I was in hospital.
You think your right tonsil growing back is a superpower?
Yes. I mean, it's it's not a good one. The other thing I can do genuinely is... genuinely, I can tell if milk is off before I open the fridge door.
Wow.
Genuinely.
Because you remember buying it several months ago.
I haven't had milk for 3 months.
I walked up to the fridge, that's it, and I just went, the milk's off, and opened up and it was off, and I was like, I know this won't help save humanity, but it is still a superpower.
Wow.
So with my grown back right tonsil and my milk powers, I'm just saying, genetically...
I've got a scar on my cheek that tingles when there's going to be a lightning storm.
Wow, between the two of you, how useful.
Are you genuinely Harry Potter? Because that is what happens to Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Are you?
Can I just check? We've got lightning cheek woman and sour milk right tonsil woman.
How impressive that is depends on the window of time you're allowing. Like, if it tingles and then 3 months later there's a lightning storm and you think that counts, then I'm not that impressed, to be honest with you. But if it's like 20 minutes, then cool.
It's like, yeah, up to an hour.
Oh, then you deserve a comic book.
It is weird about... I've got a scar that goes all the way across my middle. I had an operation when I was much younger. It goes all the way across my middle, and that tingles when the weather is going to change. And my children have been teasing me about getting a tattoo because it's very popular now when you're older, and I was just going to have a little zip fastener done at the end.
If they leave a scalpel in you, sometimes you can tell that there's a lightning storm. Because you get quite conductive in that sense. Here's a strange thing.
Yeah.
When my grandfather died, the exact moment he died, a huge portrait of him fell off the wall. Hit him on the head, killed him.
And this is also true, Sandy.
Sometimes it's more like panto.
Yeah. Genuinely true.
Genuinely true.
And it's only happened once, because I've only encountered it once.
Your left tonsil grew back, and then...
I've got a scar on the back of my leg, which happened when a girl pushed me over in the long jump pit when I was at school. And I ripped...
What were you doing in the long jump pit? Do you know, of all the places I've ever tried to imagine you, the long jump pit... What's the school? A school of people who are either going to do long jump for the school or sit in somebody's garden with a fishing pole. Careful now, your right tonsil will flare up.
I was actually very good at long jump.
You're very good at long jump.
I was a good sprinter. And I would just hurl myself. Anyway, I had a serious injury.
Yes, did you? What did they use to make you jump a long way? Did they put sour milk the other end?
Anyway, so I was in Edinburgh at the Fringe, and I hadn't been bothered by it for 20 years, and I got a searing pain in my scar as Hugh Grant walked past. So I can detect where Hugh Grant's in the area by my sore leg.
We're certainly building towards a feature film with you. The NHS has been declared the world's best healthcare system, according to a report by the Commonwealth Fund, an international panel of medical experts. So if you've suddenly seen an upswing in the number of people waving English flags and painting St George's crosses on their face, that'll be the reason. 2 points to Holly. Ramesh, who's going to get fined if their kids drop behind?
Parents. So Michael Wilshaw, sort of the Ofsted head dude, has said that if parents allow homework to be not done, miss parents' evenings or fail to read with their children, they're going to be fined. They're trying to crack down on bad parenting. But, I used to be a teacher, and, you know, when I was doing parents' evenings, I used to just blag it. Sometimes, you know, if it was a kid that was quite quiet, I wouldn't really know what to say. And then I would just say to the child who was sitting next to the parent, what do you think I'm going to say? And then based on what they start to say, I'd get an idea of what they're like, you know. So
you were basically like a psychic, psychic.
Basically, a kid would sit down and I would start to get a feeling in my scar as to how good or bad they might be.
I just don't think you take my abilities seriously. I'm starting to think you don't actually believe I have abilities.
No, I really do. Why don't you do a long jump for us right now?
I can see an exciting superhero film about scar people called the Eczema Men.
It's going to be like the worst version of the Avengers ever. also, the other thing is, talking about reading with your children. Like, my son has just recently started school, and reading with your child is one of the most sort of magical and rewarding things that you can do on day one. After that, it's one of the most inane, unrewarding, boring things you could possibly do, because they just look at the picture and put it into the sentence without any regard for if that works at all. So I'm looking at my son and he says, "Jack went spider." And I'm like, how did Jack go spider? Doesn't even make sense. Show me what that looks like when Jack goes spider. What are you talking about? It's, it's sort of caused a relationship breakdown.
I'm really impressed that you were a teacher at all, because honestly, small children are deeply annoying. My stepdaughter, who's now 9, there's a sort of cut-off point with children. Once they can colour within the lines, they become sentient human beings. Before that, it's just hideous. And trying to play I Spy with a child who's just learning to read is one of the most tiresome things on the planet. And I was in the car, and she must have been about 5, and I was doing really easy things, and there was a double-decker next to us, and I said, something beginning with B. Just a long pause, nothing at all. B, and there's a double-decker right next to us. I said, lots of people travel on them. And she went, oh, I know, wheelchair.
Yeah, they're like Family Fortunes contestants, aren't they? Something you might find in a sock drawer. Antelope.
The worst is when it's the other way around and they say, I spy something beginning with T, and you've been there for 45 minutes and they say, I give up. Banana. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? My sort of issue with this sort of parenting thing is, I've had a bad experience myself because we had to move my son from one school to another. I said to my wife, I'm going to choose a school because I don't do very much around the house. So I thought I would, step up and do something and be a better husband. And I chose a school that was shut down for not meeting minimum government requirements. Now, that's it's a difficult situation. It's one of Michael Gove's free schools. I think the solution should be make all the schools brilliant. I'll pick the nearest one. Instead, I've got to do a tour, a 5-minute tour of a school, and then make a decision. I'm still not sure about my wife. I have to wander around making a decision.
And people keep comparing the state system to the private system, saying, well, you wouldn't have a private system if all the state schools were just as good. Well, the rich have a completely different attitude to education. They sit the child down at the age of 4 and say, now, your mother and I still love each other very much, and you'll always be at the forefront of our minds, but we're not going to be seeing you for a while. Are you going away, Father? No, no, I'm not going away. No. No, you misunderstand. We will be seeing you when you're 21.
I went to boarding school. I went to boarding school 20 minutes from my parents' house. Which is one of the most... I was easily within driving distance for them to drop me off and pick me up, and they went, nah, don't worry, see you in 2 weeks, it's fine.
Seriously, I thought I was the only one. I went to boarding school in Guildford, and my parents lived in Dorking. I don't know if any of you know, but seriously, it's 10, 15 minutes up the road. Head teachers and principals should fine errant parents who fail to attend school meetings or help their children with homework, according to Sir Michael Wilshaw, the Chief Inspector of Ofsted. I have to say, finding parents has been going on for years. I was once charged £80 for leaving my son on a double yellow. 2 points to Romesh. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Holly have got 5 points, but Romesh and Susan are in the lead with 6. We start round two with an ad from the Cygnus Book magazine.
For sale, 2-bedroom detached house in Bognor Regis with adjacent healing sanctuary. The property would suit a couple interested in healing or alternative therapies. Ill health forces sale.
And our thanks to Annie Cousins for sending us that. Holly, why is no one liking GCHQ?
Is this story about the government monitoring all our tweets and direct messages and any other chat on social networks, which
yes.
I don't see as particularly new news, because I have been scanning Facebook for years, doing full background checks on anyone I fancy. So this isn't a surprise. This is the story of Charles Farr,
yep.
Who's the government's senior security officer, and he's officially confirmed for the first time that they've been looking through all our stuff to find out where the terrorists are. So as a test, I decided to direct message my friend Arnab with something that I think a terrorist would say, like bomb, bang, I don't know what terrorists write. But
Nothing. I think it's a little more subtle
is
than
it?
That.
Okay.
I don't know.
But anyway, absolutely nothing happened. Nothing. Apart from all my cards were stopped and I haven't heard from Arnab for 6 weeks. But, yeah, I think it's amazing that they're doing this, that they go through everything now. Like, there's no privacy whatsoever.
Wouldn't it be great if Charles Farr had just made this whole mass social media spying thing up because he'd been caught on Facebook at work?
This is a tremendously sexy story. This is my 50 Shades of Grey. Because it's the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act 2000, which... Oh, do you feel it? It is... And it really is, for a data protection nerd, this is like...
Seriously, darling, you need to get out more. No,
no, it is, because the point is that the RIPAR 2000 allows all this to happen. I mean, it's actually an astonishing admission, which is because Twitter, Facebook, etc. are all based in the US, which is considered an external communication. So even if I was direct messaging you, Holly, in the next room, which is what we do because we don't really like each other, if I was... we're very good friends. She fancies me. If I was direct messaging you, because it goes through servers abroad, they can look at that without a warrant, and that's the key. And there is no justification for them looking at everything, because they shouldn't be looking at everything, but RIPAR allows them to do that.
But it must be so boring. Did you see that the CIA have a Twitter account now, and that briefly followed Keith Chegwin?
Did you see that they tweeted, "We can neither confirm nor deny that this is our first tweet"?
That's brilliant.
But I don't know, like, you know, I sort of think, you know, who really cares if they're going through our Facebook and Twitter? You know, like, you know, how many cat videos can you watch? Yeah, and you know, you look at Facebook, it's inane. I like to go through Facebook and just look for people that I know that could be on the verge of a breakdown. And when people say, "Why do bad things happen to good people?" that's when you want to follow and see how that's going to spiral out of control. Just click a like. Light the touch paper and stand back and enjoy, you know.
But I don't think there are many terrorists. I mean, they keep saying, "We know who the jihadists are. They are currently in Syria fighting the Assad regime." And you think, well, all right. Well,
I like the way you've had to retire that accent, but you just brought it back now.
No, that wasn't Jimmy Savile. That was William Hague, you fool.
Can I just say the BBC would be very keen that you didn't confuse the two. The government's most senior security official, Charles Farr, has admitted that Facebook and Twitter can be monitored by the security services because they are deemed to be external communications. Those wishing to avoid a snooping government are advised to have no internet presence whatsoever by either rerouting their IP address or signing up to BT Broadband. 2 points to Holly. Jeremy, which separation has been hard to bear?
Oh, the Paddington Bear. Mm. OK, Colin Firth... What's going to be Paddington Bear? Because they're making a new action movie about Paddington Bear because they weren't happy with the rather charming little animation with Michael Horden. They've got to make it into a new film in which Paddington Bear has sex with Muffin the Mule and there's a plot to take over the world and they have to defeat it and things like that. And they thought, who should play Paddington? Obviously, someone Peruvian would make sense, because that's where he's from, but they got Colin in to do it, and he said that he just didn't feel that his voice was right.
So who should we have?
You know, we don't know much of Paddington's backstory. All we know is he tips up at Paddington Station with a note. Mm-hmm. I strongly suspect he's from the Shining Path, actually, if you think about it. He's sent by the Shining Path guerrillas in Peru with this bogus story about he's some kind of marmalade-eating homeless bear who needs to be... adopted, and clearly he's operating as a mole within children's books.
I'm worried about it because, you know, he just sort of turns up and he starts causing all sorts of problems. He destroys his family's house, and it's like an obvious anti-immigration message.
The thing is that Paddington Bear has given the passive-aggressive person the greatest weapon in our armoury, which is the Paddington Bear stare. I use it all the time. You just stare. Because Paddington, that's what he did. He didn't get angry. He just stared. So you just sit and you stare. And you know they've walked away 5 minutes ago, but you know that they felt that before they walked away from you.
If you do that, they're not thinking, "Oh, yeah, that's a Paddington Bear stare." They're thinking, "What a weirdo." Like, they don't know that that's a stare.
We can't just have staring. We have to have the voice. Who are you going to have for the voice?
I would have Helen Mirren.
John Hurt. John Hurt would be great because you'd know it was John Hurt. He wouldn't make any effort. He would just say, I am Paddington Bear. I've come from Peru. I like a marmalade sandwich.
Yeah. I think they should...
Paddington Bear played as the Elephant Man. I think we should have George Osborne. This is a really... I do. Oh, he's got that same battered suitcase, and I bet he doesn't know how the London Underground works either.
I worry, though, with Colin Firth. I'm glad he's dropped it, because his voice is too sexy to be a...
You don't want a sexy bear. That's
you don't. I don't want to hear Colin Firth say marmalade, because that's also my safety word.
Oscar-winning actor Colin Firth has pulled out of voicing the upcoming Paddington film, saying that the Peruvian bear simply doesn't have his voice. The news that Colin Firth was pulling out of Paddington led to the board... ..led to the Board of Film Classification immediately rating the film as an 18. The film has brought the story into the modern age. Paddington still turns up at the train station, but now he's removed and destroyed by the security service.
That always annoys me when they do that at train stations, where they're like, bing bong, this is a customer announcement, any unattended items will be destroyed without warning. And I always think, but that is a warning. But you've just give, what you should just do is go, bing bong.
Bang, yeah. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
Yes. This was sent in by Alan Burton, and it's from the Chambers Bar and Grill in the Wirral. Chambers offer a selection of teas to accompany an array of cut finger sandwiches.
This is sent with the ground regulations for international fixtures at Headingley Cricket Ground, sent with the tickets for the England-Sri Lanka Test match. Regulation number 7, the throwing of any object within the ground is strictly forbidden.
This is from the Independent Online. It's Pikeville's saggy pants law goes after youths with their trousers down. All I know is we don't want them running around half naked on our streets, said Mayor Phil Cagle. That's the bottom line.
Susan?
Yeah, sure. This is from the Surrey Times. It's from Chris Henley. There were 118 reports of stolen animals, placing Surrey 24th out of 40 police forces that responded. The lowest was the City of London, with only one reported dog theft, and the highest was Edinburgh, with 30,593 thefts. However, 30,000 of those were bees.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Holly have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Romesh and Susan with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting spotted by Mike Hudd from the I newspaper.
An experimental cannabis drug has produced promising results in a small study of children with hard-to-treat epilepsy, sending shares in its British maker to an all-time high.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Holly Walsh, Romesh Ranganathan and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Sandy Topstick, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Jack Banhart and Andy Walton, with additional material by Sarah Campbell, Max Davis and Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch. The producer was Katie Tyrrell.
To listen again to any of our comedies on Radio 4, please go to bbc.co.uk/radio4/comedy.